Welcome to episode 41 of A Legitimate Salvage. And we did it, everybody. This is the end, for now, of The Expanse on Amazon Prime.
No.
All right, let's introduce ourselves one last time, including the person who just wailed uncontrollably.
That was a pretty intense expression of emotion from coming from me. I am Katie Burt.
I'm Jen Burt.
I'm Chip Sutterth.
And I'm Warren Fry.
Welcome to our recap and review of Season 6, Episode 6, Babylon's Ashes. We finally made it. We finally made it to the end, and we are left wanting more, and we hope to have more in the future, and we will have more to say about the future of A Legitimate Salvage as we get into the podcast. I just want to barrel through the episode description, and let's talk about this episode, the series, and what in the world happens next, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right. Kara and her zombie sibling return to their parents, who are properly spooked at his protomolecule-shaped abilities. They go on the run while Admiral Duarte gazes almost lustfully upon the station being built in orbit. And that's about it for Laconia, unless the show comes back. More on that later. Meanwhile, Earth, Mars, and Drummer's faction make plans to keep Marco and Aros from hunkering down at Medina Station. They plan to divide and conquer, with Holden proposing a Plan B assault on the Ring Station to take over the railguns. Inaros himself knows that the fight is coming, but he's confident Duarte will help, and Rosenfeld convinces him to bring Philip back to the flight deck. Now, we have a bunch of bonding moments with the Rossi crew, complete with revelations of Clarissa's declining health and a family dinner. It's the calm before the storm. Plan A fails, as Inaros misdirected everyone on where his ship was. Drummer's fleet is shredded, but Walker's suicide run damages the Pella and kills Rosenfeld. The Rossi attacks Medina Station, while jump soldiers, led by Bobby and Amos, rain down on the Ring Station. Clarissa risks her life to keep the Rossi flying, and the surviving soldiers try to take over the railguns. The best they can do, after hero moments by Bobby, Amos, and the Rossi, is to take them out instead. Not a problem, Marco thinks. He can just call up Duarte for more support. Duarte laughs in his face, saying that Marco was a useful distraction, but Duarte has gods to kill. Marco masks his tantrum, dismisses Philip's anger over Rosenfeld's death, and rallies his people toward Medina. Holden and Naomi realize that some of the drop soldiers' pods were swallowed up by the Ring entities. They're close to the mass energy threshold that wakes them up. So Plan C arrives, blow up the soldiers' carrier ship, just as Inaros enters Ring space. Naomi presses the button herself, dissolving Marco and the Pella, and, she believes, Philip as well. Epilogue. Earth, Mars, and Drummer's faction agree to an independent transport union to manage Ring traffic and try to protect against the Ring entities. They can't agree on who to run it until all eyes turn to Holden. He demands certain assurances, which leads to him leading a press conference in which he takes the job, names Drummer vice president, and promptly resigns. Profit! Leaving Belters responsible for leading the transport union. As the Rossi crew consider their future, we flash back to something that Naomi doesn't know yet. Philip abandoned the Pella before it was destroyed and has changed his name to Philip Nagata. Roll credits. And that is the conclusion of the Expanse television series. And let's just rip off the Band-Aid and ask the big question. How did we like it?
Oh, I think they really nailed it. Like, I think maybe I'll go back later on and notice things that I would have changed or maybe don't make as much sense. But after finishing it, I was just like, I've gone through so many emotions. They wrapped up so, like, I jumped up at one point. I cried. Like, and they wrapped up most of the storylines, I'd say, pretty well. Considering,
I was clutching a pillow through most of it. So, yeah, I was like doing a lot of the, well, you can't see it, but yeah, I was clutching a pillow in great, what's the word of anxiety? And not quite anxiety, but tension through the most of it.
Was it a fuzzy pillow, their job. Warren? Were you clutching a fuzzy pillow? Was it?
It was not a fuzzy pillow or a wife pillow. It was a couch pillow that was conveniently at hand.
Yeah, I loved this episode too. I'm just so impressed with how they structured this final season and this final episode with it. I think we're going to talk a little bit about some of our favorite moments later. And when I was thinking about what those were, it definitely was plural. There were so many moments that I loved that you could just feel the weight and the depth behind them and the complexity of them, because the show has put in so much work over seasons of storytelling. I think it's a common experience we probably all have, where you're watching the end of a TV show or the third act of a movie, a big movie, and there's these moments, and the theme, like the themes they're expressing or the statements they're making are all great. And you're like, yeah, I support that. But there's no emotion behind it. There's no weight. Mm-hmm. And I always feel, even when I like those moments, they feel superficial. And I wonder what it would be like if there were more depth to them, if the work was able to, you know, be put in to make those really land. And I feel like the Expanse finale was just full of moments that landed and that felt so incredibly earned, which has always been the case with their season finales, I think. But to be able to do that with a series finale is something different, well-related. And
even in season four, you know, Amos beating up Murtry, that's like the chef's kiss for a season that didn't grab us the way that a lot of the others did.
But TV always has the advantage because you've gone through it. Six seasons with these people, like, and and the other thing that TV has a hard time doing usually is sticking the landing, because they've run out of gas by that point, and these guys clearly didn't, right?
Or TV shows are not meant to be ended, or at least traditionally, you know, that's exactly, not part of their story structure. And for this show to do this, when I know there's like a time jump in the books, but like there's still more story to be told, and for them to be able to end this story so effectively is very impressive to me.
I really didn't believe they'd do it. Even after the last episode, I just felt like I wasn't going to get enough. I felt like six episodes wasn't going to be enough, and that all of the stuff happening from the Strange Dogs novella, the stuff happening on Laconia, I felt like I was going to be left wanting too much more. Spoiler alert, I don't feel that way.
But I do want to see what they've seeded here, because they have seeded some stuff.
Exactly. So how did they do it? Because I'm trying to I'm trying to figure out how they managed to satisfy the four of us with so much more that could be done.
I saw, and this is purely technical, I saw a thing from one of the showrunners who said the reason it's six episodes because they said, okay, here's the money you have. And they said, well, we can make six episodes if we pile all the money into this last one, basically, which is more or less what they did, really. So
some of those special effects and battle sequences, I was just, you can see the Amazon money. They were so impressive.
Yeah, and it's cool that, you know, that's only a choice that's able to be made in this era of TV making, where it's not dependent on, like, this is how many weeks we have on the TV calendar, and you have to make that number of episodes to fill it in.
And you have to do a bottle episode.
Yeah, you have to figure it out. But regardless of how many, how long the story should be, or what would be best for the story. And I think in terms of the Laconia plot, I think they did a really good job of keeping the scope of the story really small, while also just creating the sense that the world around Kara just was so much more complex than she understood. And then we understood, but they knew what was happening there. And obviously book readers know a lot of what's happening there. I think it doesn't always work, but I think if the storytellers know the answers to questions that they're not necessarily going to give to us, but that can make a huge difference in the world building. And I think I felt this with Laconia. And by keeping it on Kara and, you know, having it be the story of her both saving her brother, maybe in some way, but also just her relationship to this alien space and place and creatures is so interesting. And the fact that she's so fearless, and it feels like it's the kind of perspective that is a lot harder to have if you were not born on this world or didn't, or knew other things, and it felt alien. Like, to see this world through her perspective, which, you know, as a kid is probably a lot smaller than adults. I just think keeping it at this level of scope, and also making sure we understood the stakes of what she was feeling and what she was experiencing, was a way to make this feel like a full story, even while I really want to know what happens next. Mm-hmm.
They could have made Duarte more of a character, but they really have that one scene with him at her brother's like funeral or whatever, and he seems like such a nice guy.
But no.
You don't see really see him again until this twist of like, oh, okay, this is not who I thought at all. Mm-hmm. But it was enough to seed, okay, whatever that comes of this plot line in the future, if they do some sort of spinoff, or I just go read the novella, it was the perfect amount.
I don't think you seed this stuff unless you're planning for a movie or something.
Yeah.
Like, it just seems like they've got something in the works here.
I mean, why even include this plot line unless you are, I guess, yeah, unless you're going to do something with it.
And you're not actually being unfair to your audiences so much if that you've got the books. So people who are desperate to see how it all works out, it's a really, really nice balance that they managed to pull off of bringing closure to the story of season six and establishing future directions that they could go in. How they pulled that off, I'm just grateful that they did. They didn't leave us with a proper cliffhanger so much as they just gave us hints of where the story could go. As far as a sign off for these characters, at the end of this episode, we've got pretty much all of our core characters on the Rossi. Bobby's flying the ship. Naomi and James are still in love. We didn't have an end of season breakup. Even Clarissa's sort of come into her own. How do we feel about where we left the characters at the end of episode six?
Well, with Clarissa, having the thing where, oh, you're going to die in 5 years seemed like kind of a little out of nowhere. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, I guess it isn't because she's got these implants and all the rest of it. But it did seem like, well, you're telling me this now when we got 20 minutes left in the show and the series. What's going on here? Other than that, I thought everything else landed pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I definitely, there was a point where I thought multiple people were going to die, talking about clutching a pillow, the entire battle sequence with Bobby and Amos. I was definitely clutching a pillow.
I was convinced that we were going to lose several characters because we got the dinner scene.
Yeah, that came to mind for me too, yeah.
And I thought like they were setting up like, oh, Clarissa's gonna sacrifice herself in some way. I really thought like when she goes to fix the reactor, I was like, oh, well, is this like a Wrath of Khan? I'm just gonna get a bunch of radiation.
When Bobby went straight ahead, I was like, oh, she's gonna bite it. She's done. Like, this is not gonna end well.
Yeah. And both those characters went into that. I mean, they all did, but especially Bobby and Amos. Mm-hmm. Went into it knowing, oh, there's a good possibility we're not going to make it. And then, like, while they're in that fight, are also kind of making decisions that are like, and this is how I go out. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I'm glad they all made it.
Or even when Amos, like, turns and sort of shields her, I'm like, well, he hasn't had the giant Goliath armor. What the hell's going on here? He's going to bite it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you, Warren, though, that I don't know that the inclusion of that moment where Clarissa realizes she has this condition and that she has a life expectancy of 5 years, like, it was necessary to include here. And I think they probably did because they wanted to create more tension in that moment where she goes to fix the reactor.
Right. Yeah.
I think there was already enough tension.
Yeah, they didn't need to add that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it wasn't something that I thought was, like, necessarily a misstep. It just felt unnecessary in the way that very little of this episode and this season did. But I also thought that someone was going to die of the, Rossi crew
complaint.
Family. Mm-hmm. And I do like that they didn't, just because it's nice to have a happy ending and they've all suffered so much in so many different kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. And do in this episode too.
Yeah.
And I think that there is this idea that for an ending to be like proper on TV, there has to be like at least some kind of, death count.
Well, Drummer's ship sure had one. So, I mean,
that's true.
There's definitely a lot of death in this episode. But I think there's lots of other kinds of ways to kind of like satisfy stakes or to show pain and suffering. And this show obviously has a lot of different ways of doing that and a diversity of that, just as, exists in real life. So I'm glad that I'm glad that no one died of that core group.
Yeah, there was a big body count in the episode, but mm-hmm. all of our main characters pretty much wound up having plot armor, mm-hmm. with the satisfying exception of Marco and Aros. I never mm-hmm. really thought anything was ever going to top dropping an elevator on Diogo, but watching Marco slowly dissolve... Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, I'll take that. Thank you.
If you're mm-hmm. a Belcher and you got good hair, your days are numbered. That's basically what it boils down to. Because Diogo had pretty good hair, as I recall.
There were so many ways in which I, at different points, wanted different characters to take out Marco. But the mm-hmm. fact that Naomi comes up with, like, this plan, because sometimes I think I forget how smart she is. She's so smart. The fact that she has been kind of working on this problem that Holden gave her about the ring gate and then uses it for him. And you see Marco realizing he's lost. It's so satisfying.
I'm too beautiful to die is what I think was going through his head.
Oh, man. And it's not only a problem that is worked out by Naomi. Mm-hmm. The key information that helps them crack this comes from another brilliant woman of color. Mm-hmm. And it is Naomi who pushes the button. Not only devises it, but pushes the button.
That was hard to watch.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's important that it happens, not just because of Philip, but because it's her idea. You know, in the end, for multiple reasons, it would have upset me if Holden had had the dramatic button pushing moment.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah, absolutely. She does get the decision that was taken away from her in a way previous episode. She now gets to make that choice. And it's
a crappy choice. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Dominic Tipper just nails it. Mm-hmm. It's so painful to watch.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, when we're talking about how there's lots of different kinds of stakes or mm-hmm. Consequences that can feel final and big in the series finale or season finale, you know, this is one of them. Although, you know, we eventually find out that Philip survives. Mm-hmm. In this moment, you know, it's not Naomi dying, it's not, you know, someone on the Rossi dying, but like her having to make that choice is so incredibly painful. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the show just does such a good job of taking the time to depict what that means. You know, I think in some ways Marco's death compared to, like, you know, the classic Hollywood model or the classic TV model mm-hmm. is a little anticlimactic, and I love that because mm-hmm. he doesn't deserve, like, this huge dramatic death, mm-hmm. you know? And I think it's like it can be easy to especially give, like, powerful villains a lot of narrative, like, pomp and circumstance around these things. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think in some ways that can, like, work against the message or point that ostensibly the story is trying to make about villainy.
I mean, Duarte kind of deflates his balloon ahead of time, which leads him to make that mm-hmm. speech. But then you kind of see everything from Philip's point of view. You're like, oh, he's got nothing. He's got really nothing to go off of here. And maybe the crew doesn't know that, but Philip certainly sussed it out. So mm-hmm. He doesn't really deserve that sort of... He's already been kind of cut down by the story itself, I suppose. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's the same kind of language that he used on series. Mm-hmm. And now we see exactly how empty it is. Mm-hmm. And the performance when Duarte says, F you, Beltalota. Mm-hmm. And Marco really, really loses it. And then the mask comes right back on when Philip comes mm-hmm. in the room. Mm-hmm. You know, say what we will about our guy's perfect hair and eyeliner. but Keon Alexander is just great in the role.
Yeah, it's a great performance. He doesn't, you know, like, he is kind of a mustache twirler, but somehow it doesn't come off as camp. I don't know how, but he does pull that off.
Yeah, he really isn't. Yeah,
I think it's hard to pull off like that. He obviously has a lot of power in lots of different ways, but there's also something that's very, like, pitiful about him. Mm-hmm. And I think that mm-hmm. can be a hard nuance to depict. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And he does it. He does it well. Mm-hmm. And the story does it well.
Is there anything left hanging that we would have preferred the show handle directly mm-hmm. by now before the end of the show?
Maybe a little bit more about the Rantides, because I was, maybe just wasn't paying attention, but I was, what, gods to kill? I guess he means these red guys, but I don't really know anything about these red guys. So it's like, and then I had to read somewhere, I don't remember where, about how that's the people that originally destroyed the proto-molecule people or something. And I'm like, I don't, sure.
Yeah.
And people are just like, you're an idiot, stop talking. But, and they're right. but that part, I was a little more explanation would have been good throughout the season.
I think it hurts that a lot of that information was not only given multiple seasons ago, but it was a lot of it was in season four, which at least all of us, I think, agree is one of the weakest season.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely felt that way too, Warren. I would have liked to see, I was kind of confused that they had the Prax food yeast thing come up and then it didn't really go anywhere.
Yeah.
But I also had read that originally they were going to include more of Prax and Anna in this season, and then we're not able to, which I think was probably the right choice. But I mean, it's not the end of the world, but I'm always up for more Prax and Anna, but especially because that plot point came up. I thought there was going to be something more with it. And maybe also, I really like Monica, and I thought maybe there'd be more with her, but she got a lot to do this season. There's always more I'm gonna want to know about this world and these characters.
Okay, let's talk about Holden. He's sort of still the character around whom all of the other characters revolve. I watched a bit of the after show, the Ty and the Guy podcast/video with Ty Frank, Wes Chatham, Dominique Tipper, and Stephen Strait, and they were talking a little bit about Holden, the biggest warrior in all of science fiction television.
Relatable.
Yeah. He started out the show passing up on a job due to his immaturity, and he ends the show passing up on a job due to his maturity. I do very much like the optics and the storytelling justice of him being given this job and him turning it over to Drummer.
I don't remember what he passed up, like, because it's been so long. What did he pass up? And then when he was in the first season,
he gave up
the Navy and got on the ice hauler.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
But then also, did they want to promote him to like second in charge, which I guess he did take.
Yes.
Or he was like, I'll do it for like a little bit or whatever. Yeah. Like it felt very tentative.
Because his like commander was losing it.
Yeah.
And then
his commander wasn't, but like the guy who had the job, I think was.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But yeah.
It's been a while.
He very much didn't want response. Even when he becomes Captain of the Rassi, he feels very quickly in the early seasons of like, ooh, but I don't really want, I'm in this role, but how much do I want it?
Yeah.
And he does grow into it.
Yeah, he does grow into it, but it's not, I'm going to do for the last time on this podcast, I'm going to pull out Babylon 5 as a reference.
No, I don't buy that for a second.
There's a lot of times left.
So, spoilers for a show that's 30 years old, but one of the lead characters, the great man at the series of that one, becomes president of an interstellar alliance in the end. You know, it's sort of that traditional arc from person becomes captain, has personal challenges happen, overcomes them, rises to respectability. And at a key point when he's given the opportunity to become the president, you know, he's done a little bit of Machiavellian work behind the scenes to be in that position. And the whole story from there on is, you know, he's president of an interstellar alliance, and then he becomes, when he passes away, he becomes a legend. They even wear suits in that show that look a hell of a lot like the one that Stephen Strait is wearing in that press conference scene, you know, kind of lapel-less, no tie, you know, that sort of thing. So I've seen interaction between the Expanse creators and the Babylon 5 creator on Twitter. You know, they're aware of each other's work. But getting back to the point of this, Holden doesn't become president of the transport union. Holden gives up that power. Holden just wants
to... pimp move, I think.
Yeah. He just wants to be a guy on a ship. He's not like... He's not like Han Solo becoming a general. he's Han Solo going back in The Force Awakens to being just another smuggler schmo. So let's give a final analysis as far as the TV show is concerned to Holden, the great man who gives up being a great man.
Well, I think one of the smart things about that is there's the moment when you, when I thought, okay, he's going to do this because it's the only political kind of compromise that will give the belt any measure of power, right? He's going to do it. He maybe doesn't want it. And that's how a lot of people, especially white men that are well-intentioned, end up having power for longer than they should. And the fact that I would have bought it, I would have been like, okay. But then when he resigns, that was the part I like stood up and like punched the air. I was just like, oh, he's giving it up for this belter woman of color who has gone through so much and is so capable. I mean, it's going to be, I would love to see her do some diplomacy. That's going to be pretty funny. But she's a great leader in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't actually think of the world or the show revolving around Holden. I just think there's a lot of stories. We have a lot of stories about bad men in power, and we have a lot of stories that completely eliminate an attempt to tell, you know, feminist stories, eliminate almost like all male characters or, you know, so I think it's important to have examples of characters and men, especially white men, that exist who are different or make better choices. And Holden has been one of those characters for me. Because I think we are conditioned culturally to think of him assuming power in this way as a happy ending. And I was the same way. I went through the same process the first time I watched this show where I was like, yeah, okay, that's probably the like the best possibility. Because that's what we've been told over and over again as a happy ending, both like in stories and in reality. So for The Expanse to, and for Holden to give up that power and to realize that, you know, even though I'm sure in a lot of ways he has been told, or I don't know if Holden's character has, but like white men are told and men are told that the best thing you can do is assume responsibility and fix the problem. And like again and again, and that's how you are like a good man. That's how you, that's what you should do. That's your responsibility. So like for to be able to like push back against that and to create space that allows him to see that that's actually not the happy ending or the happiest ending or what's right, or he's not the one who should have that job. And for the show to show that is really powerful and something I've very rarely seen in media. I can't think of a lot of like any other examples off the top of my head of like a white male protagonist giving up power like that in the end, or really at often really at any point.
But another thing I did like was how Avasarala is like, no, 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 you bleep, don't do this. And then when she shakes his hand, I'm like, ah, Avasarala's crafty. She's going to find her a way to get the best out of this too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love that. I love the line where she's just like, oh, James. Like, and like, you know, calling him an optimist earlier, and she's said she's called him that before. And it's not that she doesn't want to believe in what he does, but she does in the future that he sees or the possibilities that he sees. But she doesn't allow herself to for lots of probably real reasons. I love this show.
And I think part of the reason that Holden's decision or character arc in the end works is also because of Avasarala as a kind of contrast to that, because her arc this season was very much about like, how much will you trust the Belters? How much will you view them as like equals? And it's interesting to see her in a battle situation when she really needs them. She is at least trusting them more than the Martians or the RCN people. And some of her kind of advisors, but when it comes down to diplomacy and really thinking about who has true power, I mean, Drummer calls her out on it, but it's really awesome to see that she can only go so far, right? Like, that character, it, I think, is realistic that she is never going to go the optimistic route, if we're going to call it that. She's right. never going to be able to see what James Holden sees as an actual pragmatic possibility. Mm-hmm. And she's definitely going to undermine it as soon as possible.
Oh, right. Of course
to
she
Holden,
is. Yeah.
Totally. To Holden, it's not optimism.
Yeah.
Like, calling something optimistic is, you know, subjective.
Exactly.
Yeah. Of course, it looks like she's living on borrowed time. Her medical status is questionable. We don't know how that's going to go because we haven't read the book.
How dare you bring this up?
Clarissa, you know, it's all this other stuff that's just sort of hanging out there to be devoured when the show picks up in some way or we get into the books. Philip.
You did Nagata. It, buddy.
Philip Nagata. How'd you take it?
10% a little too convenient, 90% yay, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, Jen and I talked a lot about this after watching the episode, because of course. And this was another one that I thought it worked, and I thought, you know, we've spent a lot of time with this character this season, and I think his storyline was maybe the one I was least sure. I didn't know how it was going to turn out. I thought it could go in a lot of different ways. And I like that it's not, you know, it's not him trying to, like, take out his father. It's not him making, like, this big moment in the heat of battle that changes the tide. It's him choosing to remove himself from the situation, choosing to save himself, and choosing to not be a part of, you know, his father's manipulations and power grabs anymore, and to find a path that feels right for him. So that felt earned to me, and I liked that it was, you know, it was relatively quiet. It was him just leaving, because that really was maybe all that was in his power, but also was the thing that wasn't violent, too. You know, like, he wasn't choosing violence for once, which felt really powerful, too.
It's what Naomi asked him to consider.
And, you know, I had written down, like, directly after I watched it, escape can be a victory. And I think that was something that, like, Naomi demonstrated to him. And for a long time, he, like, for twice she escaped. And that was kind of her victory in that scenario. You know, she also could have, like, she does end up taking out Marco. But first she had to get out of that situation.
She had to take care of herself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think she had to save herself. And to see him make the same choice that his mother made and showed him that he could. And who knows what's going to happen with that character? Like,
well, the book people do.
Well, yes. Not us.
Who out there could possibly know?
But that's another one of those storylines that you so rarely see, especially for men, that can be a victory. Yeah.
But one thing that kind of came to my mind was, like, they're at a battle readiness. Nobody notices a ship leaving. Like, that seems a little unlikely to me.
Yeah.
That's a good point. I thought the Rosenfeld's death scene was really powerful.
Yeah.
I feel like that character was a real, like, I don't know, like, maybe unsung. I feel like we've talked about her before positively, so maybe she is sung. But, yeah, you know, for an episode that didn't, in a finale that didn't give us a lot of, like, named character deaths, you know, her death was really powerful and sad, and also Walker's choice to go on this collision course for the Pella. You know, he's a character I think we got even less time with, and I didn't feel a particular, like, you know, he's not, like, one of my favorite characters or anything, but that was a really powerful moment, too. Yeah, very different examples of death in this episode, but both really served a big a role, and actually were related, because it was Walker's collision course that led to Rosenfeld's death. And I also think that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back for Philip. So I was thinking a lot about that kind of cause and effect during Naomi's final wise speech, that, you know, people don't know, like, Walker didn't know what was what results would come, if any, from him doing that. And his ship is taken out before it gets to the Pella, but it still actually makes, it still makes some differences, whatever those will lead to in the future. Yeah, I love the show. I'm just going to say that at the end of all my points.
One of my favorite visual moments is, well, first, because I'm a total horror gore hound, is when that one guy gets taken out by the railgun and they do the thing where his face just goes, forward, which I haven't seen since that guy did that racing thing and then season three, I think, maybe? Or was it, I think it was three. But then where Drummer just looks over and there's a big gaping hole in the ship. That is a great shot. That's a really amazing shot. Yeah, she's like, oh, we are completely screwed. All right.
Yeah.
We are basically in space. Yeah. We are now space.
That's another one of those, like, there's 10% of me that is like, would she have made it? And, I mean, great, they have enough shield technology to, I guess, be fine with this giant hole or whatever. I mean, she's wearing, you know,
she's got the spacesuit on,
Spacesuit.
It was just, it was a really cool shot. That's made me think about it.
Yeah, and I always trust that the show actually knows the physics of things that are happening and is making deliberate choices around this, so.
Other than hearing the ships go poom because.
Well, they do make some.
But nobody but, like, not even gravity, actually, which is otherwise fairly realistic. Only 2001 is the only movie I can think of or TV show that does that and does it well.
So any other things that we want to talk about that this episode did really, really well? You know, the action sequences with Bobby and Amos.
Yes.
All right. I'm going to stop right there.
Well, even just the, you know, talking about physics of things, I don't know what the, like, how realistic it is to be in these seats, you know, dropping down into battle. But
it looked cool.
It looked incredible.
I was thinking, I want to play this video game because that is hell of a level.
As long as it's not in VR, because I think I would.
Oh, God, no. No, no, I would barf. That'd be called that. Barf the video game.
it's totally the invasion of Normandy. You know, it's people. It's a good percentage of people that are not going to make it, and they know it going in. It was riveting.
And all of the names on the screen of
which I didn't know until afterwards.
Yeah, I didn't notice it either. And or maybe I saw, like, one of them was like S. Connor, and I was like, oh, that's a common enough name.
Dave
I should
Bowman's
have known.
In there. That's all the greatest hits are there, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, that's
all
why.
Of them.
Yeah, that was a nice little touch.
I was just so overwhelmed. Like, I'm not usually someone who also is, like, overtaken with emotion in battle scenes that are about soldiers putting their lives on the line like this. But, like, this really just got me because we understood why they were doing what they were doing. And I think there's been so much. And, I guess it's just the idea of them literally putting their lives on the line like that because they believe so much in what they were trying to do and also in protecting each other, which was so much of a theme, especially in Amos's storyline this season, of him just trying to continuing to try to hone in on, like, how, what his moral compass is, if it you know and, like, how he makes those decisions, whether they're he's outsourcing them to other people or trying to figure it out himself. And this scene, this sequence, just really, especially once they were landed, just felt so much about, like, well, I'm going to make the decision that is about trying to protect the people behind me and have their back while we try to do this thing that we all agreed on was is the right thing to do. And if that cost me my life, then that's what's going to happen.
So a couple of points, and it's all about Clarissa here. Clarissa explains it all. sorry, I couldn't resist.
No, that's great.
She tells Amos that for somebody who doesn't want to be the hero, you wind up being in an awful lot. And she calls him boss. And Naomi flags what that means. Here in the end, episode 6 of season 6, Amos has become a moral center for someone. It actually happened.
And I think he realized it. Because I think that, to me, he's always been one of the more moral characters, but I think him, the journey for him has really been about him accepting that, that he actually, in whatever way, has been able to develop this. And that is a really powerful journey for a character to go on. Not even that they become a better person, but that they accept that they have become a better person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For whatever my frustrations were sometimes with Clarissa having a little bit more screen time this season, when I sometimes wanted other characters to get that, it really paid off because of their relationship, because of realizing it really is a great demonstration of how far he's come.
And also the little moment she has with Naomi and getting Naomi's perspective on how hard it was for her initially to give Clarissa a chance. Because I do think of Naomi as a character who can be really generous with her empathy. So kind of like flagging and articulating why that was difficult for her in this case and how it was, you know, related to her own pain over Philip was really cool. Mm-hmm. And for Clarissa and Naomi to kind of recognize that Clarissa is still very much at the beginning of this journey of proving herself to them and of, you know, washing the blood off of her hands, you know, especially for herself, too, for in a way that maybe Clarissa can feel better about. And, you know, we're going to keep working at this because it's like a lifelong journey. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Let's wrap up this conversation, I guess, with just sort of looking at the series as a whole. And we'll have an opportunity for a little bit more conversation about the series as a whole later on. I'll have an announcement about that coming up. But one thing I wanted to ask, while I don't think any of us missed Cass Anver, I'm wondering if we missed Alex Kamal and if the show missed Alex Kamal or if his absence actually sort of worked for the show.
I mean, they worked him in as mentioning the character, so clearly they miss him in the character in some way. But it worked out fine without him, I guess. So,
I was actually talking to a friend a couple episodes ago, and he hadn't realized, he didn't know any of the personal stuff with Cass Anver and why that character was written out. And it was really interesting to talk to him about how much he connected with the kind of plot line of the moments where they are missing Alex. Because I think for me, knowing the behind the scenes stuff, sometimes that really bounced off of me. Less so in the season, and I think they probably pulled back on it maybe in some ways. And so, yeah, because I did love that character. I got into a whole conversation with my friend about it and the things that he did bring. And because he was kind of like, oh, I didn't really like him anyways. And I was like, oh, okay, well, or the thing I liked about him and the thing I miss about him is because of these other characters missing him. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he brought all those family dinners and they still managed to have a nice family dinner in this episode. So
yeah. That was almost a moment where I'm watching it and I'm like, yeah, this show doesn't need him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it feels similar to like discussing the decisions they made about how many episodes to do given the budget. A good show can figure out how to move forward with maybe unexpected or things that are out of their control changes and like what's possible for production. And I think this show did an amazing job. And I think it's so cool that they made the choices that they did. And that just feels so much. Yeah, that just feels so important and powerful. And I think the fact that they made those choices, it feels like it's in line with the message and themes of the show. Yeah, I think I was really impressed by that. And I think that actually influenced my watching of like the post Alex stuff too in a positive way.
Yeah.
I think a lot of shows don't handle it well. Like I was just thinking the X-Files had a hell of a time with Duchovny leaving and then all, even though I didn't mind some of the Doggett stories, it's been years since I watched any of this stuff. Like that, there is an example of a show that just could not handle a complete right turn. You know what I mean? And there's probably plenty of other ones I'm not thinking of.
Yeah.
These guys did. So.
And there's like a lot of positive examples of them doing this well on this show. Like, as much as we talk about, like, we're excited to read the books now, and they have this great source material, and they have the writers as part of the show, examples of, like, Drummer is not, like, the same character at all in the book, and it is because they saw Kara G and her talent, and they wanted to keep her, they rewrote what that character would be. And I think there are probably a lot of, I'm excited to see what some of those decisions were, you know, bringing Avasarala earlier on than she would have in the books. Like that.
Getting a better understanding.
Being willing to not do an adaptation that, for whatever reason, negative or positive, you can make changes.
So on that after show with Ty and that guy, Dominique and Wes are joking about all the things they used to say about The Expanse when it was on Sci-Fi and how they had hundreds of viewers. And they corrected it. No, we have thousands of viewers. And how they felt like the show really didn't come into its own until it was on streaming. They said that it was regularly, even though it was low rated on Sci-Fi Channel, it was regularly at the top of the charts on the download sites, you know, your iTunes, your Google Play and stuff like that. So it's the little show that could and did. Thank you, Jeff Bezos. They're all open to doing more stories. There seems to be hope, if not an expectation. They haven't said that there's a plan yet. If you had your druthers, what should they do? Should they do some movies? Should they do a miniseries? Should they wait a few years? Should they do some stories set in the time gap between books 6 and 7, which we don't know anything about yet? What would your druthers be?
Movie. I want to see like one or two movies, basically, to flesh this thing out. Or maybe a movie, a book, because there's 3 more books. So why not?
Yeah, I think probably a movie, which is not usually my instinct. I'd love to.
No, mine either.
And I will make the pitch for the Polyam Belter Fam reunion. Whatever happened to some of those characters that left and didn't die? Like, you know, all of those characters were great. Those actors, so enthusiastic about the show and each other, it seems like. They seem like they have a great time on set. I would, yeah.
Side note, drummer walking through the empty quarters where her fam was missing. That made me so sad.
I know.
I want to see a Polly Ann Belter fan sitcom. That's what I want to see. That's our spin-off right there.
I mean, I just want more seasons of the show. I know that's not really... But like, if I get to choose, I want more seasons of the show because TV show format is my favorite. But I also think I really would be happy with anything, or more accurately, I'd be happy with whatever decision the creators and production team make, because they've proven both with the show as like a more traditional TV series and as a streamer and in this last season that they are able to make good decisions about, you know, what is the best course of action with the resources they have. So I like what you're saying, Chip, about having hope but not expectation. That's definitely where I'm at.
Yeah.
But whatever happens, you know, Jen and I were talking about this too. I am just grateful to have had 6 seasons of this show. And if it never continued on, I would be sad, but I would continue to be thankful for what it has been and what they were able to do with this story. It's definitely one of my favorite shows of all time.
In real world terms, like all these people cost a lot more to get, especially if it's a movie, right? So so I would not be surprised if they do something that's more Laconia centered than anything else. And then the occasional person pops in for a guest appearance. Just because that's how you make this stuff dollars and cents wise, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. By the end, it wasn't just Stephen Strait with a producer credit.
It was everybody.
All of them did.
Which is mostly vanity, right? I mean, but it still means they're getting paid more, so.
Yeah, it's money. Which is also cool. Like, I hope that means that they were good negotiations, like, and they gave maybe more of that power and profit to this cast than, other productions might have.
Well, I was going to say, obviously, Shorey Agadashilu had an Oscar. Did she win an Oscar? She was nominated for an Oscar, you know.
Yeah, for, I can't remember what it was, but yeah.
House of Sand and Fog.
But yes, over, that's what
and,
it was.
You know, Stephen Strait had certainly had a career, but like
sky
a lot
high.
Of these people, you know, this really, yes, sky high. They've been working, certainly, but the fact that they really were given great material to work with and hopefully really got, you know, like you said, some money and they're going to go on to get more work because of this. Like someone Frankie Adams, they like had basically been on like one New Zealand TV show and was primarily like doing some sort of martial art, I think. You know, like
if Kara G doesn't lead a show or a movie or something, then that's a crime, frankly. So
I know.
Yeah. Yeah, I want more from these actors. I want more of The Expanse. I'm just Kylo Ren in Last Jedi screaming, more! You know, I can't remember the last time I was so thoroughly satisfied by a series that had a beginning, middle, and end. You know, Babylon 5... hell, Gargoyles, the animated series Gargoyles, you know, things like that, that have that sort of serialized thing going on for them. But yeah, this was so good. And I would like to see them make more. And I think that they've got the vision for doing it if they've got the financing for it and a home to share it. So let me tell y'all what's coming up for your Legitimate Salvage crew. First up is an upcoming episode of The Incomparable, the flagship show of our podcast network that's going to wrap up the TV and book series. That episode is going to have me and Jen, along with Jason Snell, Aline Sims, and Dan Morin. We're going to get together. We're going to talk about the TV series, and then they're going to space me and Jen and talk about the books while we're off in non-being spoiled territory. So that'll be at theincomparable.com. Follow The Incomparable on social media, and we'll also tweet about it as well. And speaking of the books, all right. We give
you
up.
You win.
Fine. You win. We're going to take a bit of a break, and then we're totally reading the books. I think that book one, I think we've all got copies of it by now. Mm-hmm. We're in position. Mm-hmm. We can get started on that. So, and we're going to bring some friends along who have been with us on the podcast journey, who've been listening to us, who've been telling us, you know, you got to read the books.
Insisting upon it, in fact.
Yes.
Yes. We're taking you down with us. We're going to invite people in to see that. So that's the future of A Legitimate Salvage. A pause for recovery, and then we're going to read words. Warren, Jen, Katie, it has been an absolute pleasure watching this show with you, catching up on the reruns, getting to the point where we could watch the show in real time, and I enjoyed it twice as much because I got to watch it along you all.
Oh, thanks, Jen.
Oh, yeah. Right back at you. It's like one of the, I think the media I enjoy the most is things that are dense enough to, and rich enough to really keep talking about and to talk with friends about.
Dense like me.
Exactly. Me. That's I'm exactly what I was too, trying to say.
So. Yeah, I think especially, you know, I cover TV for my full-time job. So sometimes it can be hard to do things that are like that when I'm not actually working. So I think in that sense, like I love talking about TV and deciphering it and analyzing it, but that alone maybe would not have drawn me to do this. Like the thing that made this so special was getting to talk to all of you, you know, about every episode and to share our passion for this show. And I think especially during the pandemic, there were times when I'd get off of recordings and just feel like I didn't realize how much I needed that until it happened. Mm-hmm. So thank you to all of you, and thank you to everyone who's listening. And I hope that maybe a fraction of that has been communicated over the, not the airwaves.
The internet beams.
The cables.
Subspace. Yeah. Whatever
the tubes.
Over the wireless.
Whatever they use in The Expanse to talk, to get around light speed communication.
Exactly.
So please follow us for updates at Legit Salvage on Twitter. We are, of course, at The Incomparable Network. If you want to listen to previous episodes, theincomparable.com/salvage. Thank you so much for joining us. Until next time.
The universe never tells us if we did right or wrong. It's more important to try and help people and to know that you did. More important that someone else's life gets better than for you to feel good about yourself.
Until next time.